It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, everyone! Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is still desperately trying to figure out why YouTube keeps suggesting I watch a 12-year-old Fat Boy Slim music video when I have given it no indication that I have any interest in anything related to it. It's very confusing. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 621.
Yes, and we have lots of very serious stuff to go through, so we're moving this time. So, this is going to be a two-parter, so I'm going to explain the podcast now. I'm not going to explain it next time. Deal with it. We have a hat. It's magic. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All of you, everyone who can hear this, should and does and will and do it, writes into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. The hat magically blah, 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 forwards it to us. We read them. That's the show, except when it's not, which is ever increasingly. I don't even know if we'll get to anything this week because we just have so much, because last week we spent the whole time arguing about God. I will, however, say, having talked with multiple people about this since then, our listeners found it interesting, which is good. And I will also say, I walked away from that conversation having new and interesting thoughts in my head about the possible nature of God. And I don't think that's happened in like 20 years.
Wow.
So that was cool too. So it was worthwhile, but we got a lot of shit to catch up on. But the big thing, the most important thing, William, you have finally seen the greatest movie of all time that does not involve a man throwing a live leopard at another man in the middle of a fight scene. Although honestly, it could have had that and it would have fit with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You saw the unbearable weight of massive talent, aka the Nick Cage movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was really, really good.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So I texted you while I was watching it, how fun it would be for these guys to be in more movies. But I mean, the more I thought about it, the harder it was.
But this is what I said when I told you they had great chemistry. And you were like, I think Pedro Pascal just has great chemistry with everyone, which is true, but it is especially noticeable in this.
No, you're right. You're right. So yeah, I was thinking about what they could do if they made other films, and it would be a shame if they just said, "Oh, you guys are great together. Let's put you in a buddy cop movie, or let's remake Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or something." No. They should, you know, they should figure out what works, that special thing that's working just for them. And I was thinking, well, what is that exactly? It seems to be all about the meet cute, right? Like, what is the thing that, you know, how do they meet? What's the not just the plot behind that, but you know, what are their what's the relationship when they meet and stuff? But then I started thinking, it's hard for me to think of a situation. You know, I wouldn't want to use a cheap throwaway meet cute. I mean, it's got to be something like this, where it's like, so you know, Nicolas Cage, the real Nicolas Cage, you know, meets ostensibly a millionaire, but it turns out that this person is a millionaire or whatever, because for criminal reasons, which of course it would be, because if to me the meet cute is the real Nicolas Cage meets a younger man who is a millionaire, who admires him, but that's why Nicolas Cage is there, because the guy's a millionaire, not because he admires him.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff kind of have to go with it. Like, well, what's the conflict here? Oh, well, maybe he's made his millions from criminality. Well, then why would Nicolas Cage go there? Well, maybe he didn't know, and the CIA tells him, and they, you know, all that kind of stuff kind of comes from it. But also, though, that's not really what the meet cute is about. The Meet Cute is about two creative people basically meeting their creative soulmate in a way. Does that make sense?
I think
that's
so.
That's what it's really about.
I don't think it makes any sense to people who haven't seen the movie, but no, having seen it, I'm like, I think it does.
All right, I don't mean to.
But this is, but I think this is a problem to recreate, because for all that it's a fictionalized version, Nick Cage is playing Nick Cage.
Yeah.
And Pedro Pascal is not playing Pedro Pascal.
That's right.
And so I don't know how you do that again.
This is my idea. This is my idea. My idea is, so given that I feel like this is a soulmate story, make the subsequent movies also soulmate stories, but like the insinuation is that they're in alternate universes. Because
So we're doing Cloud Atlas, but it's all about Nick Cage.
Right. Right. Now, maybe you can only do it two more times. Maybe it would only be a trilogy. I mean, I don't know.
I would watch it. I would watch the shit out of it. I'm not, I'll be honest.
And the formula is somehow you have to get them to meet, and the meet cute has to appear on the surface to be about something completely different, but then somehow they realize that they're some kind of soulmates by the end. It doesn't have to be creative, but although I really liked that, I just loved that. But it doesn't have to be that. See what I mean?
No, it was an interesting theme. And I think especially worked here, because the whole movie's about Nick Cage dealing with his sort of perceived loss of creativity within his career and within his life. And then this movie is about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like this movie's incredibly meta, even more so than just Nick Cage playing Nick Cage. Like this movie has an almost Blazing Saddles quality to it of it's you're in a movie within a movie, but that's just the movie. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to explain unless you see it. And also I don't want to spoil things, but like I mean I would watch the shit out of what you're describing. I also believe this can't ever happen again. I'll tell you it won't also, because this is also one of those things where you've got a graph of something going like this and a graph of going somewhere like this, and this is the moment they meet. Because mm-hmm. Nick Cage, no offense to the iconic treasure, his best days are not ahead of him career wise and Pedro Pascal is the rising star,
right? Oh yeah, he's
with good reason. So yeah, I'm not sure their paths will cross again much more.
Yeah, it definitely felt like lightning in a bottle for sure. But as I thought about it, I thought if you did it, you'd almost have to do it this way. There's no way it could possibly work. But I even came up with a name for it. I can remember it. Yeah, the Nicolegro multiverse.
All right, so we're done here. Never speak to me again. I'm just going to turn this off.
Wow, that's pretty good.
The Nicolegro multiverse.
Well, they have to have one of those smashed together names.
No, stop now. Not only do I hate it, I'm angry at you, because that is almost certainly the title of this episode. And I do not like attaching my name to that, but I don't see a way around it.
I'll bet if I thought about it some more, I could think of like at least two more pitches to at least make a trilogy out of it.
But the problem, even if you set aside that I don't think they're going to interconnect again, the problem is show business is a business. Mm. And honestly, you just drop Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal in a movie where they're the main characters, it's probably going to be pretty fucking watchable, regardless of literally every other aspect.
No, that's true. I mean, when I thought of
like just, why would they stretch themselves?
Right. But I mean, I even thought about like, what if we just put him in some remake or if it wasn't a remake, something with an old trope in it, that would still probably be awesome. But it wouldn't be like this, because this is just really special. What they were able to do. I thought
Nick Cage as Keanu Reeves. Pedro Pascal as Patrick Swayze in another remake of Point Break.
I mean, if anybody could do it, they could.
I mean, I know they're a little old, but I'd be fine with that too. Maybe it's a sequel to Point Break and they're in the nursing home now. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah, they just, I mean, it was well done on just so many levels. And, you know, Nicolas Cage.
Like, I love that it spurred you into this creativity, but I'm so like, you can't do anything with it. Like, nobody can imitate this film. Uh-uh. And first and foremost, it could only be Nicolas Cage. And I don't mean it's a movie about him, so of course it is. I said it when I first saw it. You couldn't pick a different celebrity and make a movie like this. It relies on the perfect storm of talent, hubris, and fucking insanity, and sometimes laziness. The weird mishmash that is Nicolas Cage, one of the greatest and worst movie stars of all time, like simultaneously. He has such a unique footprint,
mm-hmm.
that it is the only one that could make this movie. By possible coincidence, or maybe this is what made you thought of it, Pedro Pascal hosted SNL last week.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
And I really loved it. I am willing to say it might not be as good as I think it is. I just love him. And I spent a long time. He's another one of the, actually, I've discovered this. Christoph Waltz is in a similar thing. I love them. I can see almost nothing therein. They do things that I'm just not interested in. Pedro Pascal, most people, you're going to say Narcos, no thank you. Game of Thrones, we've discussed, no thank you. And fucking The Last of Us. If I stayed the hell away from those games because they sounded like bummers, I'm sure as hell not going to watch the HBO prestige drama about it. So my dealings with Pedro Pascal are Mandalorian, Wonder Woman 1984, which I hated, but he was the best part about it. and Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. So anytime he's in something, I'm like, yes, please. So I was super psyched about the SNL. I will say they did a bit that was HBO's having such success with The Last of Us that they're going to make another prestige drama based on a video game. It's Mario Kart.
Mario, yeah. I did see that.
And it's really good. That sketch is pitch perfect. I loved everything about that sketch.
He was in the second Kingsman movie. Did you not see that?
Was he? No. The last scene of the first Kingsman movie ruined the entire series
for me. No, I get it. But I thought maybe
I need to pick it up again, because until that moment, I really enjoyed the first one.
He was good in the second one, and I don't remember. I mean, there were a lot
of people in that one. And I've heard the third is pretty good. I don't think it revived the series, but...
No, yeah, we saw it was all right. But yeah, I thought it was just a genius film.
When we watched it on Prime, and it cost $5.99 to rent or $9.99 to own. And I went with rent. I thought about it, but I was like, come on. Now I'm like, oh, I wish I had. I might be willing to spend that money to buy it now, because I could rewatch the shit out of that.
Yeah, it's good. And Pedro, I mean, I think I saw some reviews that, you know, said that he was a scene stealer or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know, man. He's just so good. You know, he is not lost in the shadow of Nicolas Cage in this film.
No. They are the main characters, and they work together in just such a... And the movie's a huge farce. Yeah. Obviously. Like, nobody had to tell me. The movie definitely didn't happen. But again, because it's Nick Cage... So much of it, I'm like, I don't think that actually happened. But if somebody told me that happened with Nicolas Cage, I would. If anybody was gonna have that happen, is that guy?
That was great. Yeah. It was just great. And it's original too. I mean, I've never.
Right.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that's even close. That's just, they just really. But yeah, I mean,
movies are out there, but this is just, yeah, it's so hard to explain. I'm glad that you saw it, because I remember trying to explain it, and like, we can talk about it all we want, but you don't get it unless you see it.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think you kind of have to see it. I'm curious to know what, you know, any of our listeners who've seen it. I mean, yeah, you talked about it, so you'd think they would have commented by now, but
you know. I'm guessing nobody. It didn't make big waves, which I'm very sad about.
I mean, I think the critics were fairly positive about it.
That doesn't hold so much water these days.
Yeah, audience scores were pretty high. In fact, I think they're equal. I think if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, for example, it's like 87% and 87% or something like that.
I love how you pushed Rotten as though we might go to a different Tomatoes site. If you go to Fresh Tomatoes, not
so
much. If you go to
Rotten, Metacritic, there's other things.
No, I know.
We don't have to. It doesn't have to be Rotten Tomatoes all the time.
This episode is not brought to you by Pepsi Zero Sugar Mango Flavor.
So Pepsi Zero
might be my favorite soft drink at this point.
Pepsi Zero is sweetened how then?
Aspartame, I assume.
Oh, okay.
That's how most zero sugar things are.
Well, I don't know. We drink zero sugar things here, and it's whatever that other stuff.
Yeah, but you drink zero sugar things from the hippie aisle.
Yeah, from the hippie aisle. That's
this is traditional diet soda, and it used to be called Pepsi Max, and in other countries called Pepsi One. And I latched onto it originally because it is a zero calorie version of Pepsi that has all the fucking caffeine. The only one I discovered that has more caffeine than Diet Mountain Dew. But then they came out with these mango flavors, and for some reason I fell in love with this, and it sporadically shows up. It's not consistent anywhere. Right, so often when I see it, I'll get myself a 12 pack.
For a while they had diet and zero of things. zero wasn't.
Well, they
just
still
diet.
Do. They still do.
Well, then what's the difference?
Okay. Well, when it comes to Pepsi, I can't tell you. There's Diet Pepsi and there's Pepsi Zero Sugar. I can tell you Pepsi Zero Sugar has a lot more caffeine. I can tell you they taste different. Mm. But beyond that, I don't know. It could be tied into the fact that apparently Pepsi, just straight up Pepsi, has in our lifetimes changed its formula like 5 or 6 times. They just like don't talk about it, as opposed to when Coke did the whole thing. I explained to you the whole Diet Coke versus Coke Zero bit, right?
Yeah, but I don't remember that
one. Diet Coke is the diet version of New Coke exists.
Right.
Coke Zero is a version of Classic. Coke Classic, which did sort of exist as the soft drink Tab. Which is why, if you used to drink Tab like me and you taste Coke Zero, they are very similar.
Huh. Well, I thought for a while there that if there was a diet and a zero, that the zero wasn't just zero sugar. It was sweetened with something other than, say, aspartame. Like
not as far as I can tell.
Okay.
And most of them don't have both. Most of them just switched. Like Pepsi suddenly decided they were going to. I think the word diet fell out of fashion.
A
lot of things suddenly switch from being Diet Sprite to Sprite Zero, things like that. Also, Sierra Mist is gone and has been replaced with a beverage called Starry.
Yeah. Yep,
and it tastes like Sierra Mist. Kind of like Slice. Remember Slice?
Yep.
And then it went away and we got Sierra Mist. And I can't tell the big difference in those. It cracks me up, the people who are like, Sprite sucks, 7-Up, like have specific ones. I'm like, they're all lemon lime soda.
I did think when I was younger, I thought that Sprite was a little more syrupy tasting than 7-Up. Like when 7-Up
it's possible that it is. I drink them seldom enough. Like if you blindfolded me and had 3 cups, I probably could tell they were different. But I drink them seldom enough that I'm never like, oh, this one's weird. You know?
Was Slice a so you remember Like Cola?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I think that was like just a Melcher Dallas phenomenon.
No, Like Cola. It seems as though that cola brand had other flavors, and I thought Slice was like part of that same company, but maybe not.
Slices of Pepsi, at least at this, it was when I
knew about it was okay.
And it had a variety of flavors. Yeah, there was an orange slice there for a little while. There was like a spiced one or something around. I think to compete with 7-Up Gold, which nobody was into except me.
What was 7-Up?
I love the idea of like cola, because that sounds very Soylent Green, or like almost pizza. You know, like, it's like cola.
Well,
it's cola. No,
their ad campaign was about how they used real cola nuts in the production of their cola.
So it's not like cola. It's cola.
It is cola. Yeah. And there was one commercial. They had people sort of chanting in the back, like there was a protest and everyone was saying, why can't all colas be like, and then some guy was interviewing one of the protesters while the protest was going on about it. And the person was saying, yeah, they use real cola nuts and, you know, other colas don't do that or whatever. But of course, if everybody did it, then why would anyone buy like?
And years later, they remade that commercial for Pepsi with Kendall Jenner, and it caused quite a stir.
Well,
all right, we can't be bogged down on soft drinks. What else did you do this week?
Bogged down. I mean, it seemed like there was something I want to talk to you about, but then that film just pushed everything else out. So,
is that the only film you saw?
I mean, I probably not. But it probably what I did see I didn't like. Oh, no, that's not true. We saw the Wakanda Forever. Saw that. Mm-hmm. The problem though was the kids were over and we were watching it with them. So, you know, there's a lot of distraction with the grandson and with all that. So I can't really comment on it because I missed a lot of it. But I mean, it looked good. I mean, it looked like it was a perfectly good film. It was, but it was sad too. Like, you know, it was sad that Chadwick Boseman couldn't be in
that. If you really felt the loss of Chadwick Boseman as much as you could, being a person who's never met him or whatever, like me, there is something to be said for that movie. Purely as sort of a, and also if you can't manage the to process loss except through like superhero shit, then there was some catharsis to that. Overall, my feeling about Wakanda Forever can be summed up by my neighbor's very short non-spoiler review of it. Which is surprising because I don't think my neighbor and I share much in the way of tastes in movies. But he said before, when we hadn't seen, he had gone to the theater and seen it, and he looked very disappointed. I'm like, is it bad? And he said, it's a Marvel movie. It's not a Black Panther movie.
Yeah, I seem to remember you saying that now that I recall.
And I cannot come up with a better I could talk about it at length, but that's what it comes down to. It is an MCU film, and the original Black Panther was something different. This is not, to the degree that I know Coogler wrote it and directed it, the same guy who did the first one. If I didn't know that, I would have guessed he didn't.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah.
And I don't have a lot else to say about it because, like I said, I think that sums it up. Except on a very personal level, it may end up being the last MCU movie I see. I haven't switched into like a boycott thing. But as we recall, after Endgame, I was like, I'm just going to see him if I'm interested. And I've still seen all of them so far. And I hit the point where I'm like, I'll watch them when they're on Disney Plus. It's not costing me. But this really hit home for me. I've seen them all. And they're all kind of the same. And every new one is kind of just that same movie. And I'm not sure I give a shit anymore.
I think what I would say, one observation I'd make that makes it be more of a just a generic Marvel movie rather than, you know, a Wakanda movie, is a lot of it felt like a commercial for future projects, which is what a lot of that's a Marvel movie is a lot of that. And there was a lot of that in there where characters were introduced and situations were introduced and all this other stuff was happening. But you felt like, I feel like this is more of a setup for something else than its own thing. Which, and I think what makes me think that, because you were mentioning the writer and director didn't seem the same. I mean, why would he have put that stuff in there? Except that
that's
Kevin Feige said,
is that
do this stuff because it's going to come up later. Yeah. You know,
at this 5 years later, the MCU is a much more well-oiled machine. And so they probably have a lot of requirements about how it's supposed to go in a way that the last one didn't. Because again, the first Black Panther is the only MCU movie I've seen more than once. It's the only one I've cared to see more than once. And I love it. It's not a perfect film or anything, but I love it for what it is. And all the others aren't that. Trish brought up an interesting point in this one, though. This is an extremely female-led movie.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of the villain and some side characters that get a surprising amount of screen time for doing absolutely nothing. All the main characters in it are the women from mostly from the first Black Panther. We got Letitia Wright. We got the one who plays Okoye. We got Angela Bassett. Angela Bassetting the shit out of things. We got Lupita Nyong'o back as Nakia. And Michaela Cole from I May Destroy You shows up as one of the Dora Milaje. And it's totally wasted. Like, that would have been more, like, it's a pretty small part, but it's fun to see her in that. She does well. But my wife says, is a bunch of female leads, but they're all just playing male leads with boobs. Like, every sort of aspect of the characterization and what they did, if you had switched it to being a male character, it would have felt exactly the same.
Hmm.
So it wasn't. It didn't feel particularly female led, despite being extremely female led.
Hmm.
At least to her, and I think I agree. But like, yeah, in a few months when the new Ant-Man comes to Disney Plus, I don't think I'm going to bother anymore. I thought I was going to. Jonathan Major. Cool, but I'm like, no. And I mean, and again, I'm not boycotting it. I may change my mind at some point, or I may just be like, you know, when I'm high, I'll watch them. But I suddenly realized sort of the futility of bothering. So I might be done. We'll have to see. With the movies, the shows still sometimes get interesting and different, and I still might check those out. I doubt I'm going to check out the Riri Williams one that we're going to have soon, which is why Riri Williams was in this movie.
Right.
I don't know that I'll bother with that one, but we'll see. I'll probably try out second season Loki. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I liked her. I'll probably
She was fine. She's very Marvel. She got jokes. She got jokes in stressful situations, but
so yeah, that, you know, other than that, I can't remember, and probably isn't anything noteworthy anyway. What did you do this week?
I got lots of shit. Well, it's not even this week, it's before then and all that. Mm. We've been booking it through TV shows, mostly because we all keep bailing. So Trish bailed on Doom Patrol, I bailed on Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. We are actually watching the Willow TV show.
Oh.
And that is very interesting.
Hmm.
I don't know that I think it's good.
Oh.
I am enjoying it, except when I'm really not enjoying it. And Trish is really not enjoying it, such that I keep thinking after each episode she's going to bail. I love Willow. And I think I've talked about this before. I can't tell you why. It did not make a big splash in the world. If anything, it's almost a cult movie now. And it wasn't bad. It just didn't do, like, it wasn't a big deal. And most people feel that way. They who have seen it, they're like, yeah, I saw it. It's fine. Whatever. I love it. And I don't entirely know why, but we saw it again before we watched this, and I still love it. And I still acknowledge it's a very adequate fantasy epic, but I love it. And I think it might honestly be, having sort of a crush on Warwick Davis for my whole life. And honestly, it also may come from a weird fucked up place of what age I was. And I was at an age where I really enjoyed things with little people. Mm. And there's a lot of little people in that movie. Mm. And I mean, that's a terrible reason to like a movie, but there it is. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I was also at that age. I couldn't get enough fantasy, any fantasy. I would eat it up. But I still love it. The TV show has some of that. Whatever the movies had, it's still there. I'm actually really impressed. Seeing the movie again, I realized what a terribly flawed character Willow was.
Mm.
And this is a sequel series. Willow is in it. He is much older. And Warwick Davis is doing an impeccable job of playing this character, the same flawed character grown up, and having resolved certain flaws, but some are still there. And like, he does some stuff that's not great. And it's like, but that absolutely fits with the character who's a wonderful person. Like the flaw is not selfishness or anything like that. There's a certain level of defensiveness that's built into it that I really like, that kind of thing. And that's very much there. We also worked really hard to give, we have a bunch of young people, all of whom may or may not have crushes on each other and shit. And it's very teen in that way. And some of them are really annoying, and some of them are changing. Because, you know, anything where you have teens like this, they start off shitty and then something happens and they learn to be better or whatever. You know, this is how this always works. It's worked this way since Star Wars. Some of the teens are not having their redemptive epiphany fast enough for me, and they're just really fucking annoying. But okay. Some of them are. It's quite funny in places. And actually, I have a favorite character. His name is Borman, and he is 100% my favorite character. He's also the only one besides Warwick Davis who's older in the main group. We've done a lot of things where people had to make stupid decisions so we could have conflict. I'm not super great with that. We have explicit homoeroticism and homosexuality in it on a degree that I don't expect from Disney. In fact, when we started, I could see signs of it. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to keep it real vague. And then two women kissed each other in the first episode. And I was like, oh, shit. Now, to be fair, the show's not so much about that, but it's definitely there. It's not exactly fanfare for, you know, pro-gay or anything. But it is, I would say for once, unlike all the other times Disney has claimed this, and this time, weirdly, they didn't, it is explicitly gay.
Hmm.
Interesting. So I like that. It's also quite funny in places, but I really get the sense, it really feels like somebody wrote the funny parts and somebody wrote the serious epic fantasy parts, and they were different people. Mm-hmm. And I wish the person who had wrote the funny parts had written the whole thing. So we'll see. I also get the very sneaking suspicion that nothing's really going to be resolved by the end of the season. And I have no idea if it's success, so I don't know if it'll go on or not. We also tried to pick up the second season of Avenue 5 on HBO Max about the near future, where there's the luxury space liner that gets stuck out there, and it's comedy, and it's got Hugh Laurie and Josh Gad and other people whose names escape me. And so we watched the first episode of the second season, and then we finished, and I told Trisha, said, you can take that on your own. She said, really? And I said, yeah, I forgot that it's not funny. It's 100% just a comedy. It's not an action comedy or anything like that. It's just a comedy. and it's not fun. Wow. And I had forgotten that this episode was just like the ones in the first season. It's not like it's gotten worse, but I was like, oh yeah, didn't like this. So I'm done with that one.
Okay.
I'm cruising through a season of Doctor Who I hadn't finished and Lucifer. And both of them I'm trying to appreciate on their own merits. I'm really trying, like, neither of them are what I would call good television. Lucifer especially is bad television. Don't watch it. No one should watch it. But they both have things about them that are entertaining, and I'm trying to sit on those. It's easier with Doctor Who because Doctor Who is shorter. There's like 10 episodes in the season. Lucifer has the big honking episodes, and I'm still got a season and a half left. And maybe I did I speak on this already
about
that I was back to watching Lucifer.
I think you mentioned it. Yeah.
The problem is you and I talked a bunch after the last couple of episodes, and I can't remember what was then and what was not, but right. I've always complained about Lucifer that the character of Lucifer is weirdly stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, spoilers for a TV show you absolutely should not watch. God eventually shows up.
Oh yeah.
God is also that. Very stupid.
Stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. Of course I said it. That's what sparked the entire last episode. Now I remember. So, yeah.
God is also stupid.
Yeah. Nope. I've got some stuff on the back burner. I'm going to go with Lockwood & Co. on Netflix. Looks interesting. Trish decided she wasn't interested. So.
Oh, yeah. We watched that.
How is it?
I can't speak for Abby, I guess, because I don't know if we talked much about it. But I liked it. All the things that made me interested in seeing it, you know, I thought, oh, there might be some really interesting lore and stuff here that, you know, that pretty much, you know, scratched that itch. And I thought the young actors did a fantastic job, really. I don't remember thinking it was like what, like you said earlier, prestige television or anything like that. Yeah. But
it doesn't look life-changing to me. It looks quite British, and it looks like it's got quite a lot of lore. And those are two things I really like. So
yeah, I think I'd be interested to know what you thought of it. Yeah. Cause I don't remember having any particular issues with it. I mean, we'll watch more when there is more.
I've also got two seasons left of Lock and Key, which I still plan to watch. I've just suddenly jumped back into watching this. I have also discovered some of the truly great treasures of my life on television.
Oh,
one, the one I have the least to say about, is a series on Netflix called Gudetama, an Excellent Adventure. The neighbor kid told me about this because I mentioned Gudetama. Gudetama is a much beloved character by me. Gudetama is my favorite character in the Sanrio Hello Kitty family.
Oh, okay.
Gudetama is specifically an extremely lazy raw egg who by and large is manifested as a yolk colored little tiny vaguely humanoid naked person relaxing on a bed of raw egg white. This is how I discovered them when I went to Disney World one time. I had not known about this one, but it's just, and his whole deal, I think it's he, it's their whole deal, is just relax. Like, let's not, I don't want to do, let's just have a nap. Let's just chill. It's fine. Whatever. Life is fleeting and pointless. It's like laziness mixed with just the right level of sort of fatalistic existentialism in a way that I'm just like, I relate to this very strongly. And there's a series on Netflix of it with like there it's a short, it's like, you know, 10 minute episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Gudetama and who came out of an egg and just was on the floor or whatever. And Shaki Pio, who is a baby chick that came out of the same carton of eggs.
Mm.
It hatched and it actually had a live chick in it. And Sharky Pio is very enthusiastic and energetic and very much wants to find their mother and has convinced themselves that because they came from the same carton, Gudetama is their brother. So is determined that the two of them are going to go and find their mother out there.
Okay.
And Gudetama doesn't give a shit, but also doesn't give a shit enough to not. And it's not like Gudetama's walking anywhere. Like, Chakipio made a little wagon for him out of a half eggshell and just sort of slurps him in there and then pushes around. But they're both obviously CG. The rest of it is live action, including actual live action people.
Wow.
And it's all in Japanese, and it's hilarious. It couldn't be a bigger episode. Like, you want a nice bite size 10, 15 minutes, but it's adorable, and I love it. And it's great sounds. And occasionally, I should say, there are other CG creations. There's an episode where they're on at one of those sushi restaurants where the conveyor belt goes around. There's different foods, and they end up on the belt, and they talk to an old, wise egg sushi who's just been dried up and sitting on the thing since the restaurant opened. And then there's a different sushi with little roe eggs, and they all as a group ask the others about individuality. So they talk about what does that mean, this whole thing. There's an episode where Gudetama ends up becoming prime minister, but then decides they don't care and stops being prime minister. It's a deal. It's a ridiculous show, but I love it. But that's not the important. The important one.
Okay.
Also on Netflix, but other places. I will explain. It is involved. Is B and Puppy Cat.
I don't know what that is.
It's a show. It's an amazing show.
B-E-E
and Puppy Cat.
Oh, B and Puppy Cat.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
Long ago, not that long ago, but some time ago, there was a great animation studio called Fredator, I believe, because the founder was named Fred. And this animation studio created a YouTube channel called Cartoon Hangover. And it's basically an incubator for indie animation projects.
Okay.
And it's still out there and it's very cool. And certain things from it have gone on to networks and things, including, I think, Adventure Time may have started there, or maybe one of the spinoffs for Adventure Time started there. And at some point, a woman whose name escapes me came up with this idea and called B and Puppy Cat. And it was about a 20 something girl named B who was really, I hate to say lazy again, but it's sort of like she kept getting jobs and getting fired from them, like on like the same day and shit. She just didn't. And she's just sort of a burnout, just sort of a flake. And one day, she receives a pet that she's not positive if it's a cat or a dog. It's kind of hard to tell. But this animal speaks, sort of. They use a Vocaloid and it says gibberish, but it is subtitled and people can understand it. And Puppy Cat has this power to take them to temp space, where a temp bot computer thing will give them temporary jobs to different planets and different dimensions. And they have to do something. And then they'll get paid. And so then they can keep going because B, the human, has basically exhausted all the jobs that are possible where she is.
Okay.
And there's hints at deeper story. There's hints that it turns out the thing that we couldn't tell if it was a dog or cat is literally named Puppy Cat. She didn't name it that. That's actually its name. And there are other characters in the town. There's a boy she kind of has a crush on and things like that. But it's mostly about this. And it's not for kids. And I don't mean that kids wouldn't enjoy it, but it is, you know how we've talked about this, old cartoon, old kids cartoons will have things in them that are for the adults.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is for kids, but we do a layer of nuance that's pretty grown up. And not only is it for adults who might be watching, but kids, as they get older, can sort of start to catch on and that kind of thing. This is the exact opposite. This is a show, I think, for adults, but it has a certain vibe to it that appeals to the child within me and the child within others. It is very much a term I recently heard called waname, in that it is not from Japan, but it's made by somebody who clearly really likes anime and wants it to be like anime. Right. It has that sort of feel to it. It has a surprising number of celebrity voices in places. And it's bizarre. And okay, anyway, I should finish the story before I get into more detail on this. So anyway, the pilot happened. It's on YouTube. People are like, awesome. Great. We love it. Make more. So then they made a series of like 10 episodes that are very short. It's technically more like 5 two-parter episodes, in my opinion. And people love that as well. And again, all still on YouTube. At a certain point, they made another, they essentially did a remake of it. That was a little bit longer, but a lot of the same plots and the same premise and everything, but like cleaner animation and stuff. And it took a while. They had to have a Kickstarter, and I think it broke records for indie animation Kickstarter at the time or whatever. And it got made, and eventually Netflix was like, we would love that. And so they took it and commissioned like 3 more episodes so that the beginning and the end would sort of make more sense or whatever. And that is on Netflix.
Mm.
And that's where I found it. And I watched the first episode and I'm like, wow. And then I was talking with the teenager next door, and he's seen it, but he saw the YouTube one. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, the pilot for it. And I was, so then I started looking into it and I found all this. So now I've seen the pilot and I'm going through the YouTube one, and then I'm going to go back and watch the Netflix one. But here's what I will say. This is the only thing way I can sort of describe things and give you, you, the listeners, and the William, a sense of if you're interested. I can also say it's very short. It's very easily digestible. So if you're curious, just check it out. It's on Netflix or it's on YouTube. Like, everybody's got YouTube. Just go YouTube. There is a scene in one of the early episodes, maybe even the pilot, I don't know, where Bee and Puppycat are on a job on a little planetoid, and one of the shticks is that B always gets a strange sort of uniform like onto her before she goes to the job. And because reasons, they end up having to fight a monster.
Hmm.
And at one point she does a very sort of Sailor Moon magical thing where she puts her hand up and like light forms and it makes this sword, this crystalline sword. No explanation, it just happens. There's a lot of magical girl Sailor Moon concepts in it that aren't ever elaborated on. They just are there. And so she has this sword, and Puppycat is grabbed by the monster's tongues, basically. They are like tentacles and they grab Puppycat, and she's like, I'm gonna save you. And she runs up and she grabs onto the spot of the tongue between the mouths and Puppycat, and she just starts chewing on it. And Puppycat, who I will remind you is a vocaloid that doesn't say actual words, but you see the subtitle, so it's all this weird chimey talk, says, use the sword. And so she takes the sword that's in her hand and starts beating on the tongue with the bottom of the sword for a few seconds. And then finally Puppycat says, again in the cute little chimey vocaloid voice, use the sword as a sword. And she takes her mouth off it long enough to say, in the tone I'm about to use, don't tell me what to do. And then bites her way through. And that's not what her voice sounds like all the time, but that at the moment. And then bites through the rest of it with her mouth, and it finally falls, and then they finish the fight. And like, yeah, that's the vibe. So
Okay.
If that sounds appealing to you, I would recommend checking it out. There's a lot of stuff. Puppy Cat is really cute, but has major issues of not wanting to be seen as cute, but wanting to be seen as like tough and badass. Puppy Cat has a very grumpy cat sort of face. Like, it's even when it's happy, it's not smiling kind of thing. But I love it. It warms my spirit. So yeah, I talked about the two important shows. I have two more movies I have to talk about. I'm not going to talk about The Estate other than to say, again, nobody see it. Just trust me. Don't watch it. It's terrible. It'll just make you feel bad. And it's not, it's a comedy that's not funny at all. I know I have to talk about two more movies. Why am I forgetting? Oh, I remembered one, but not the other. Now I've remembered the other and I forgot what the one was.
Can't help you.
All right, well, I'm going to start on the other one, which I wanted to save for the end. But, oh, no, no, I remember. You People.
Oh, You People, yeah.
You and I already talked about this, but Trish and I saw You People. Starring Jonah Hill, Eddie Murphy, Nia Long. Directed by Kenya Barris, who's the one who's done all of Blackish and its spinoffs. And co-written by Kenya Barris and Jonah Hill. In it, Jonah Hill plays a 35-year-old Los Angeles Jewish man whose parents are Julia Louis-Dreyfus and David Duchovny. And he, via adorable misunderstanding, meets and begins to date a Black woman played by Lauren London, who's not somebody I ever knew before, but she does a wonderful job, whose parents are pretty militant Nation of Islam, played by Eddie Murphy and Nia Long. And it's a comedy. The movie is a comedy. And it's basically about these two people getting together and then their families trying to interact. And about race relations and things like that. Apparently it's not doing very well, critically speaking, which is a shame, but I also get it. I'm glad I saw it. I liked the parts that I liked very much, and I laughed quite a bit. I did not like the parts that I did not like very much. The movie says a lot about race relations. It also, in my opinion, says a lot about class while not acknowledging that fact. And I find that difficult. It also, for all that it definitely has things to say, is a broad comedy and kind of a romantic comedy, and consequently has a lot of shit in it that I could absolutely have done without, but it's necessary to make those happen.
Right, right.
My wife apparently thought I wasn't going to see it because she thought I didn't like Jonah Hill. And I'm not sure where she got this idea. I do like Jonah Hill. In particular, I like Jonah Hill more now. Jonah Hill has done a lot of things I don't like, which is fine. But I think he is a thoughtful comedian and is really getting into places where he's trying to say something and find nuance and not just bro humor kind of things. And I think this shows up here, too. It's very Kenya Barris. If you ever saw Blackish, I think your feelings on this movie might be similar to that. Mine were. I think Blackish was a great show. I watched a few episodes. In general, it was not for me. And it just... I am not well served by the particular mix of comedy and message that Kenya Barris creates. I think it is a useful mix. I think it makes it very approachable to a lot more people. I'm not opposed to this at all. It doesn't always jibe with me so well. One gets in the way of the other a bit for me. Sure. So I'm glad I saw it. I think it is worth seeing. I am very much glad it's out there. I hope more movies like this are out there. my feelings on it are mixed. It did provoke some interesting conversation between Trish and I in the moment right after we saw it. We haven't really gone back to everybody in it does a great job. That's most of what I can say about that. But last night, finally, because I've been waiting for it to get cheap enough. This is the thing. I don't want to go to theaters. So a movie comes out. I'm like, shit, I can't wait till it's available. And then it is available if you want to buy it for $20. And buy it means however long Amazon has the rights for or whatever. And I'm like, fuck that. And then eventually it gets to like, you know, $4, $5, $6 to rent. And then eventually it ends up on a streaming service. So finally got into the $4, $5, $6. We saw Bros. Billy Eichner starring and written film.
Right.
Playing opposite the guy I always know as Davin from Killjoys. I've seen him in a few other things. The character in Killjoys was aggressively heterosexual, but it turns out the actor's actually gay. And I've noticed him in a couple other things for this. And it is... Oh, see, I have so much I have to say about this. I loved this movie. I highly recommend this movie. I now must give you an hour and a half worth of qualifications. When we started watching this movie independently, both Trish and I were in the first 10 or 15 minutes like, oh shit, I think this movie sucks. And then I had an epiphany. And fortunately, Trish literally thanked me afterwards. I said it out loud to Trish, and it saved the movie for her, as well as me. Have you seen the 1995 film Jeffrey?
No.
You're homophobic.
I don't.
Jeffrey is a film from 1995, starring Steven Weber and Michael T. Weiss, and it is, for lack of a better clarifying term, a gay rom-com. It is specifically about Steven Weber as a gay man in the mid-90s who finally decides that thanks to fucking AIDS, sex is too damn scary and he just can't do it anymore. And then shortly after that meets a man that he absolutely falls for and hijinks ensue. It is also a movie in which Patrick Stewart, in a role that finally made me realize he can play anything, plays a flamingly gay interior decorator whose longtime live-in boyfriend is half his age and plays a chorus boy in the musical Cats. It is a comedy. It is quite funny. It is also bizarre as hell. I think I've determined that it was originally a stage play and it has that vibe, but oh, it has a lot of scenes that are actually just sort of daydreams or metaphors and other scenes that ostensibly within the movie really happen, but they're so over the top that it's the whole thing feels kind of surreal. Like the whole, you cannot take the movie as a thing that happened. Bits and pieces don't fit in with that. And some of them are very explicitly sort of fantasies, but some of them are presented as though they were real, but they super aren't. And it's a movie I've seen many times. It's a movie I like a great deal. And it is very strange. And you have to, if you aren't sort of prepped for that going in, you very much might not like it. You have to understand that, like, you're not here for the plot, you're not here for, there's not continuity things or whatever. It's a story, but the journey is the point, you know, sort of. And it's not, it is a movie. It is not meant to be taken as real. And it's quite funny. It's also quite funny in very dated ways now. And it was also quite odd because of the four leads, and
Yeah, it got dark all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I think this
is where you get dragged off screen suddenly and we never hear from you again. And now you've passed the curse on to me. Thanks. The four leads and the writer and the director of Jeffrey, three of them were gay and three of them were straight. And the straight ones were the two main characters who are the couple and Patrick Stewart. And so it has that weird deal of, you know, as was often the case in the 90s and 2000s and still is, these movies about homosexuality in which straight people play those characters.
Right.
So I bring all that up. People should watch Jeffrey. It's a good movie. But again, go in understanding what it is. It's also got musical numbers in it. It's got Christine Baranski in it. It's got Olympia Dukakis in it. It's great. Bros is basically Jeffrey in 2022.
Oh.
But it's 2022, so it's much more deconstructive and self-aware. And it's also different because in 1995, Jeffrey is a movie about queer subculture.
Mm.
Bros is much more a movie about queer culture and sort of the ramifications of it being much more mainstream now.
Mm.
And in my opinion, because HIV is not particularly an issue in this, in my opinion, they replaced HIV with socially institutionalized, internalized homophobia, even amongst queer people.
Mm.
That's my opinion. Trish disagreed and thought it was much more about sort of the generational impact of how there's a whole generation now of queer adults who weren't defined by their fight for their rights or their fear of AIDS or things like that, and what they are left with. We talked about it for quite a while, and I think the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, but it's definitely a comedy. It's definitely a rom-com. It is definitely should be taken as not real, in my opinion.
Mm.
A lot of people say and do things that you're like, that's not how humans are. And sometimes it's in favor to being funny. And sometimes I don't know why it's that way. It ended up, though, it for being just basically a comedy and a rom-com, there's so many layers of nuance to me, and I found it very fascinating. And there are a couple there. Billy Eichner in particular, who again is the lead and also wrote it, has what I think is going to be just the queer high school students audition monologue for decades to come. Really good. And it's very serious in places, and it deals with sort of both sides of the internalized homophobia coin of queer people who are still determined to be whatever they want, even if it means rejecting mainstream society, which is now much more accepting, but like on their terms or whatever. And this thing that I've discovered amongst even friends and children of friends I know, where being queer is definitely part of who you are, but it is not the forefront of your identity. So to put it in really glib reductionist terms, you kind of don't make a big deal about it. Like, not that you pretend you're not gay, but like, you know, you're just a normal dude who happens to be gay. And the conflict that occurs between those two personality types. And the thing, I've talked about this before, the teenager next door drives me crazy because of how he has been trying on different aspects of gender in a way that felt very flippant to me and not respectful of sort of the struggles that people, including me. I'm the fucker who came out as transgender in the 90s and had to figure out what I was going to do. And yes, I ended up in a position where I'm basically just a straight white dude, but it was not always so. There were years of struggle and difficulty to figure out what I was going to do. And I watched the teenager and I'm just like, you're playing around with this like this is fucking toys. not like it's the serious thing that it is. And what I realized after watching this movie, or I realized before, but I had articulated, that's not why I'm upset. I am jealous of the teenager next door. I am jealous that the teenager next door gets to live in a world where he can just do that openly, not only amongst his family, but amongst his peers and everything like that. And it's not a problem, and it's just fine. And it's just a thing kids can figure out who they are. And that's a wonderful thing. And I'm just super jealous that I didn't have that. And I think there's that aspect there. People are free. Back in the day, you sort of had two options with your queer identity. You either pushed it down and hid it, or you really had to, you know, be willing to risk it all for who you are. And now it's a thing. It's not the thing. It's a thing. And you, the ways you can approach it are myriad. And when you are dealing with someone else who ostensibly is within that same community, who is approaching it differently, that can lead to odd conflict. And just the very nature that the queer community, as many of these communities, is by no means monolithic.
Right.
But still clings to that identity for a lot of very good reasons, both political and emotional. The movie did make me cry. And in fact, the movie made me cry over something that was not worth crying about. And it fucking cheated me, because right before that, it gave a monologue that made me cry. And then it did this other thing that I was already crying, and so it made me cry too. But I'm pretty sure if I had started off with dry eyes, and that I wouldn't have cried at that. But I really enjoyed it. But you really have to realize it's also very New York. There's a lot of that, which is, I feel like that's a term we can use nowadays. Do people know what I mean? If it's a comedy and I say it's very New York.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
SNL has a lot of that. 30 Rock has a lot of that. There's a vibe of comedy, specifically New York themed comedy. And contrary to all the dog whistlers of the generations, I don't mean Jewish, but like there's just a culture associated with New York, and consequently they think certain things are funny. And because New York is New York, it has spread. Like, you don't get a lot of Southern Missouri humor on nationwide platforms, but you do get New York City humor on nationwide platforms. And some people like it, some people don't. I am in the middle somewhere. So it has a lot of that, but I really got a lot out of it. And I hate rom-coms, and it's definitely a rom-com, but it is a lot more than that. And it's just got layers that I really enjoy. And it's got a lot of good cast. And actually, there's a fun one. One of the gay guys, his mother, who is explicitly straight, I think, is played by Amanda Bierce, who is an actress I don't particularly like, but I love seeing her in this situation. Amanda Bierce came to prominence as the neighbor of the Bundy family in Married with Children. And she was notable in that sitcom for being aggressively heterosexually, like, sex starved, and she was the foil. She was often the one that things ended badly for, and we were supposed to laugh at that. And she went on to produce a great deal of that show. In later seasons, she was the EP on a lot of it, and she's lesbian. And that wasn't what was happening at all. And it's really, I really like seeing her in things now, because she picks and chooses much more carefully, I think, now, because she can. Right. And to be in something like this, and I just found it really cute. Her being the fairly small town, innocent, straight mom who knows her son is gay and is totally supportive. But like, it reminds me of my parents when I came out to them as bi. Like, they absolutely tried to connect with me in very heartfelt ways that sort of showed they didn't know jack shit about what queer culture was. Or like, right. The one I always talk about, when my father takes me to the airport and we're waiting there, and he says out of fucking nowhere, "Maybe on the plane you'll get seated next to a real cute guy." And I'm just like, yep, maybe. Okay.
Yep.
And he was trying. He was really trying. And I can see that now. At the time, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this old man? But like, he didn't. And he had a story about being picked up by a guy when he was hitchhiking once. And the guy clearly wanted to take him home. and have a thing. And my dad got out of the car, and it's neither an interesting nor an uplifting story. It's my dad got in the car and this guy hit on him. So shortly after he had him leave the car, but it's like the only thing my dad knows related to gay people. So over the years, he would tell the story over and over again, and not in a negative way, but just cause like, this was his only, this was his touchstone for gay folks. This is, was his only interaction as it were. And so there's that vibe, and I really kind of enjoy that, but I it's such a weird movie. And I think if you don't come at it from the right perspective, you're not going to enjoy it. And that's why it's so difficult, because I really recommend it, but you got to understand what it is going into it. And what it is Jeffrey, but from 2022. and there aren't particularly musical numbers. So sorry about that. Cause Jeffrey had some great choreographed musical numbers. I think that's it. I'm over 60 hours into Horizon Forbidden West. So loving that shit.
That's good.
I discovered a YouTube channel called Gaming Henry. And in particular, he has a recurring segment, I guess, called Lore and Order. And he's British. So it sounds like Law and Order when he says it, but you see it on the screen. It's Lore and Order. And it's basically him explaining the stories of video games. And I think it's supposed to be that broad, but what it mostly comes down to is it's mostly him explaining the stories of survival horror video games.
Mm.
And really goes deep. Like the first section is always like the plot. And then they'll go through like, what is really happening? Look at the major characters and what it means. And he will draw again, like CZ's World. He will draw from like DLC or novels that they wrote or things like that and put them together. Oh. But rather than just sort of trying to, he will give you what the story is. And he will even say, and here's the parts we don't know. Here's my theory. Here's my evidence, but it is only speculation. And I love this because I love horror stories. But there's a lot of horror stories that I don't want to experience the real thing. And in general, survival horror, not my thing, mostly because right. It's jump scare fueled and that's not my deal. And also in my opinion, they can be many, many hours of a story that's not worth many, many hours. It's worth a 30 minute video. So I'm really enjoying that. And I've been kind of eating that up like crazy. It doesn't explain why the Fatboy Slim music video is on my YouTube. It was before then. It's according to the thumbnail, it looks like Christopher Walken's in the video, and it's called, I think, Weapon of Choice. I couldn't name a Fatboy Slim song for you. I haven't been watching Fatboy Slim music videos. I don't think I've ever seen a Fatboy Slim music video.
Is that
I know at one point I knew a song. There is like a hit that like made it to the radio and stuff that if you heard it, you would recognize it, and it's a Fatboy Slim song. I can't remember what it is now, but I know there is one. I haven't been looking up Christopher Walken stuff. Like, I don't know why it's there.
Is that the one he's dancing in? I don't remember.
I don't know. I haven't watched it. I'm scared to watch it. I don't know what YouTube's going to do if I take the bait.
There's a fairly famous YouTube video of him just dancing through some kind of office building or something when some popular song is playing. You've never seen that before? Could
absolutely be it. But again, I don't know why. Suddenly there. It doesn't, there's no, maybe that's it. Thanks to the honest trailer for Glass Onion, we ended up looking up a Belvedere Vodka commercial starring Daniel Craig and directed by Taika Waititi that is for the most part Daniel Craig just dancing his ass off through various locations, and it's amazing and wonderful. Maybe they were like, oh, you like famous people who don't usually dancing and things? How about this? Maybe that's why it's there. I don't know, but it's just weirded me out.
It's funny.
And it
you
won't
say
go
that
away.
About Christopher Walken, because he started out as a dancer. That's why he
and
did
a
the video.
Fucking lion tamer. He was legit circus folk.
Yeah.
And if any of you out there who aren't repressed like William really want to see something, Google young Christopher Walken. And see pictures not from he started in showbiz kind of late. It's from like his circus days and stuff. Dude is an absolute fucking smoke show. Unbelievably attractive. Check that shit out. But yeah, I don't know what's going on there. But we're over time. We got a second one we got to do next. So hopefully that one will have emails. But we'll never know. I mean, how could we? So yeah, that was a lot. I hope y'all found some useful things to watch or have things that you watched that I talked about that you want to talk about. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your feelings. Sister podcast, Tuning Japanese. I say that just because our most hated listener is one of the hosts on it. Did you do BM Puppy Cat? It's not strictly speaking anime, but it's, you know, in the vibe there. I've been saying vibe a lot this episode. I've been saying vibe a lot. I think I've discovered that's a really useful word.
Pretty useful.
You know, gestalt kind of sounds pretentious. So vibe is like a good way to go there. I had a whole thing I was going to discuss about my mental health. I guess we'll save that for the next episode.
I got a whole other episode.
If I'm still alive.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.